Picture a library window where someone watches for a person who will never come home. Susan, after losing her husband in a car accident, spent months looking for him from that very spot. Joan Didion kept her deceased husband's shoes in the closet, unable to give them away because he would need them if he was to return. These aren't stories of mental illness. They're glimpses into something far more universal and unsettling. Our minds are built to deceive us, and sometimes that's exactly what we need. We like to think of ourselves as rational creatures. We pride ourselves on logic, evidence, and clear thinking. Yet every day, we cling to beliefs that contradict reality. We convince ourselves we're better drivers than average, statistically impossible for most of us. We believe our relationships will beat the divorce odds. We feel certain we control outcomes that are purely random. These aren't occasional lapses. They're features of human cognition, not bugs. The tension between our quick, intuitive mind and our slower, analytical one creates what we might call useful delusions, beliefs that fly in the face of evidence, yet somehow help us survive, thrive, and find meaning in an often harsh world. In the 1980s, psychologists Shelley Taylor and Jonathan Brown discovered that self-deception serves us well. Most people engage in three flattering delusions: unrealistically positive self-views, exaggerated beliefs about control, and overly rosy predictions about their futures. The depressive realism paradox illustrates this perfectly. When participants pressed buttons trying to control a light, depressed people accurately judged their limited influence. Non-depressed people wildly overestimated their control and were happier for it. We're wired for positivity, claiming credit for successes while blaming circumstances for failures, remembering compliments over criticism, and comparing ourselves to people doing worse. Entrepreneurship exemplifies this dangerous optimism. Only half of businesses survive 5 years, yet entrepreneurs consistently overestimate their skills. This overconfidence fuels innovation, which is why we've built legal protections like bankruptcy to encourage risk-taking. Laboratory studies confirm overconfident participants completed 19% more tasks while maintaining accuracy. Self-deception even makes us better liars. When you believe your own hype, you project authentic confidence without telltale signs of deception. During COVID-19, we witnessed both helpful and catastrophic delusions. Some leaders claimed the virus might disappear like a miracle, while others believed divine protection would shield them. Yet optimism isn't always dangerous. Shelley Taylor's research found that cancer patients who believed they could control their illness coped better, with studies showing optimism leads to better health outcomes and reduced mortality. The key lies in understanding where you stand relative to your status quo, your normal state of health. When you're above this line, feeling healthy and invincible, optimism breeds dangerous behaviors. Young smokers demonstrate this perfectly. 90% eventually regret starting, having underestimated addiction risks while overestimating their ability to quit later. But when you fall below that status quo line, when illness strikes, optimism becomes medicine. It promotes productive coping, following treatment regimens, seeking support, finding meaning in tragedy. Loss aversion shapes our decisions here. When healthy, we avoid losses. Once sick, the new baseline becomes intolerable, and we become laser-focused on recovery. While Western culture discourages pessimism, defensive pessimism proves valuable. Defensive pessimists maintain low expectations despite past successes, imagining worst-case scenarios to develop preventative strategies. This explains why collectivist Asian societies generally responded more effectively to the pandemic than individualistic Western nations, where mask wearing became politically divisive rather than collectively embraced. Barack Obama played basketball on every election day after winning the 2008 Iowa caucus, following a game, but losing New Hampshire when he skipped it. While some superstitions might affect performance, like Baltimore Ravens kicker Justin Tucker's elaborate pregame uniform ritual, others merely provide psychological comfort. Psychologists Jane Risen and Thomas Gilovich found people genuinely believe negative outcomes become more likely when tempting fate. Research on luck-enhancing superstitions yields mixed results. The famous golf ball study initially showed participants told they were using a lucky ball putt it better, but replications failed. Rituals show more consistent benefits. Laboratory studies demonstrate that performing rituals helps people sing better before strangers, solve math problems more accurately, and cope with disappointment. Effective rituals involve rigidly ordered sequences with symbolic meaning, but only indirect connections to goals. Group rituals bond people together, from church hymns to team cheers. Religious belief presents a paradox. Less religious countries are happier overall, yet within any location, religious individuals report greater happiness. The key factor is social engagement rather than belief itself. Religious attendance, not belief content, predicts pro-social behaviors like charitable giving and volunteering. Love thrives on tension between romantic ideals and reality. Wedding vows present a rational paradox, promising lifelong commitment despite divorce statistics. Yet practical alternatives like wed lease, renewable marriage contracts, haven't gained traction, revealing that love requires certain delusions to survive. Self-delusions aid partner selection. Studies show confident people appear more attractive. In speed dating experiments, women found confident men significantly more appealing and more likely to warrant second dates. Overconfidence increases willingness to compete for desired mates. Certain delusions prove valuable long-term. Sandra Murray's study of 222 newlywed couples found those who idealized their partners initially maintained higher satisfaction over 3 years. A 13-year follow-up confirmed that marital love is less likely to decline when partners enter marriage with idealized images of one another. The most successful relationships involve partners who egocentrically saw themselves in each other, believing their partner is more similar than objectively true, creating a sense of being uniquely matched soulmates. These idealizing couples actually build the better partnerships they believe they have. Many report immediate attraction, with 43% claiming love at first sight. This view of love as involuntary, something we fall into rather than choose, may itself be a useful delusion that helps relationships endure. After losing a spouse, many experience magical thinking, knowing their loved one has died while sensing they might return. Joan Didion captured this. "I know why we try to keep the dead alive. We try to keep them alive in order to keep them with us." Early theories suggested grief follows predictable stages, but modern research reveals it's highly individualized. Most people show resilience, and maintaining a continuing bond through visiting graves or creating memorials often proves more helpful than forced closure. Approximately half of bereaved people report feeling the deceased's presence, regardless of afterlife beliefs. After 9/11, families posted pictures asking, "Have you seen my husband?" despite knowing recovery was impossible. Western cultures often stigmatize such experiences, while Asian cultures support continuing relationships through rituals. British novelist Julian Barnes found comfort regularly talking to his deceased wife. "If I have survived what is now 4 years of her absence, it is because I have had 4 years of her presence." Patricia Hearst's transformation from heiress to revolutionary Tanya within 2 months exemplifies our most profound delusion, the belief in a stable, unified self. We assume we're consistent individuals, and personality psychology supports this through the five-factor theory. Yet social psychology tells a different story. Solomon Osh's conformity experiments and Stanley Milgram's obedience studies showed how easily people abandon independent judgment under pressure. David Hume's bundle theory proposed we're just separate sensations our imagination bundles into continuity. Our sense of self may be our mind's most elaborate construction, a narrative we tell ourselves to make sense of disconnected experiences. Benjamin Libet's 1980s experiments revealed something unsettling. Brain activity preceded conscious decisions by 1/3 of a second. Our brains initiate actions before we're aware of deciding, suggesting conscious intention is an effect, not a cause. Harvard psychologist Daniel Webner recognized we often don't cause what we think we do. Illusions of control abound, disconnected crosswalk buttons, blowing on dice. He proposed that intention and action arise from separate unconscious processes. Because thoughts emerge slightly earlier, we experience the illusion that thoughts cause actions. This delusion of conscious will, while illusory, serves crucial purposes, distinguishing our actions from others, providing control that benefits emotional well-being, and enabling social systems of credit and blame. Evolutionary biologist Robert Trivers suggests we evolved self-deception to better deceive others, believing our own lies makes us more effective. Though our cognitive revolution gave us remarkable reasoning, survival remains nature's goal. Here's the paradox. The most rational approach may be recognizing when delusion serves us better than cold reality. While major decisions demand clear-eyed rationality, beneficial delusions help us persevere and find meaning. Perhaps wisdom lies in understanding which delusions help us live fuller lives.